Welcome back, WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. Another episode with former Baltimore County Executive Don Moeller, as we always do. It's usually led with a little bit of ice cream here. I've pulled out my Honey Graham. Luckily for me, I made it over to the Taharka facility right off the Jones Falls. They let me into the cooler, and I physically pick up these. I pay for these pints in that sub-zero temperature. Honey Graham ice cream and Graham cracker swirl ain't nothing like it in the world. Made with love right here in Baltimore, Maryland. Award-winning ice cream serving up social change. We'll talk about social change, a lot of things in this segment here. Before we do that, we've had all of these guests, and Corey McCray is a guy that I crossed paths with a couple times last year, tried to get him on, and we would do this down at Fadley's over a proper crab cake or some proper oysters or some fried fish, but we can't do that right now. But you can still ship Fadley's anywhere. We had a great conversation last week at Baltimore Positive about where all those crab cakes come from and those crabs coming out of the bay and crab picking and a real shortage in labor in that industry. You want to go to listen to Damie Hahn and I talk to Jack Brooks and the Watermen's Association about that. Don, I'm going to let you do the pleasures of your son and Moeller and Gary Realty as well as State Fair, despite the fact that I had the poutine late into the night there earlier this week.
Oh, good things happening over here on the west side. State Fair Restaurant, our good friends Evan Brown and Keith Holsey, just really crushing it during the pandemic. They got up several tents. You're looking for a place just to get out of the house where you can socially distance, have a cocktail and some great food. State Fair is doing it as well as anyone. In the next couple of weeks, pay attention. They're opening a brand new Mexican restaurant right across the street in Frederick Road in Catonsville called El Guapo. Going to be quickly become one of the most popular spots in the entire state. No doubt about that. And then we've got Jeff Moeller and Moeller and Gary Realtor. Realtor's just amazing. The real estate market, spoke to Jeff this morning, said it's really never been hotter, the hottest it's been in the past 10 years. So if you're looking to buy or sell, now's the time. Give Jeff a call, 410-746-1547. We always thank our friends at Central Maryland for helping make the podcast happen. We ask you to always check in on our good friends at Thread, doing great work at thread.org. And Nestor, we're excited to have the state senator from the 45th District in Baltimore, Senator Corey McCray, is going to try to walk us through governing in a pandemic.
What's happening, Senator? How are you?
Don, Nestor, I'm really excited, man. I'm just thankful to be here, so thanks for the opportunity.
Well, I feel it backwards. I feel like I owe you a crab cake because we wanted to get you down to Fadley's before all this. Now we're wearing masks. We're 6 feet away. Give me a little look at your life and where you were in March and where we are now, and obviously what we're trying to get done from Annapolis down to City Hall and having some sweeping change with the council here as well this year.
Yep. You know what? So in March, we were in the General Assembly. Obviously, you know, we got cut short. It was a 71-day session. We then came to a new norm where we had face masks. We were staying in the house for a good bit. And, Nestor, when I think about it, I think about my four kids. I got a Kennedy, Reagan, CJ, and Bryson. And I think about how while COVID-19 still is before us, it made me rethink how I'm always moving fast, and I got to enjoy the family a lot more. I think for the last 3 months, I've just been biking with my 5, 6, 11, and 13-year-old. We put in 8 miles is the longest that we've gone. So I'm pretty excited about that, but also getting to learn how to play Super Mario Brothers a little bit better. and then had to, you know, adapt to the new norm of just doing the Zoom calls and things of that nature. I laugh because it was Chris Van Hollen. You know, we don't always want to adapt to the newest things, but Chris Van Hollen, our United States Senator, reaches out to me and he says, Corey, I want to put together about 10 or 12 of your small business owners and talk about this PPP and talk about what the federal government is doing. I was like, man, that's a good idea. All right, let's get to it. We get Eric March. We get a lot of our restaurants. We get a lot of a diverse community on the phone, on a Zoom call with them. And I say to the center, I said, man, this is what I'm going to be doing forward. So the Zooming is the new norm now, but I've been able to adapt to it and really understand it and make sure that we move forward with it. So just trying to make sure that we help people in the neighborhoods when we're talking about food insecurity that's been going on. Unemployment has been a big issue. Just making sure that our businesses, they're getting ready to start opening back up, and they're opening back up, but just making sure that we as the government are helping them to the maximum capabilities that we can and making sure that they're successful because they need it.
Well, you know, Corey, when I came into this from sports a couple of years ago and Trumpism and post-Freddie Gray and trying to sell my condo, trying to figure out where places are, Dom was running Baltimore County, and of course Dom was my high school guidance counselor back in 1982 at Dundalk High, full disclosure. But part of this was about governance, and part of this is just, what are these numbers and alphabet soups and, you know, state and city and councilmen and districts, and what is the 45th? And it's really been eye-opening to me to see all the gerrymandered districts everywhere around, not just here but around the country. But 45, tell me about 45, because, man, I've eaten more meals and shopped up and down Harford Road, Bel Air, you know, in that part of the world. But for people that don't know where these districts begin and end, hey, a lot of people don't know where the city and the county begin and end up at the top of your district going into Parkville, right?
Nope, you're absolutely right. So when you think about the 45th district, the most northern part of our district is Northern Parkway. When you think about the southern part of our district, you're thinking about Mount Vernon, Station North, and Hopkins. When you think about the western part of my district, it is Harford Road. And when you think about the eastern part of the district, you're on Pulaski Highway. And I keep hearing you all mention great crab cakes. So the best,
I know where you're going, Senator. I know where you're going.
Yeah, I know what you're doing with this. I see where you're going. You're giving a free plug to one of your constituents.
Is right there at Coco's, and my wife makes me run out there every 7 to 10 days to make sure that I grab a crab cake from Coco's. So make sure to stop past if you already have it.
You know who loves Coco's is our good buddy, and I'm sure you know him as well, but Rob Roblin. Rob and I grabbed a crab cake recently at Coco's, mm-hmm. and it is off the chart. It's funny.
Yep.
I had someone from out of town calling me, and they were going to be out in that area, and they said, is there a really good place to get a crab cake? And it was right around that Harford Road area. And I said, well, you're going to have to trust me, because I'm going to give you the name of a place, and you're going to pull up, and you're going to say, this couldn't be what Don had in mind.
Exactly.
Just trust me. Trust me.
Hey, I grew up out in that neighborhood. Beverly Hills, man, Tyndale Road, and Mike Resigliano around the corner on Parkside Drive. So, you know, you've closed off a big part of the road over there, right?
You know what? The Harford Road Bridge is a project that's about two and a half years. It's about a year and a half in. And just making sure that the infrastructure is the way it's supposed to be, making sure that it's safe for the folks that's walking, traveling across that bridge. But, you know, obviously we have Coco's in our district, and it's the greatest amenity when you talk about crab cakes, but we got phenomenal parks. You know, when you think about Herm Run Park, when you think about Bocek Park, when you think about Lake Clifton, and you think about the asset that we have within our communities in reference to these parks, and the trails that's there is such a great space to be able to raise a family.
Well, you know, Corey, that's one of the things that probably doesn't get enough mention, right? And boy, you talk about an angle for Baltimore Positive, is the amount of green space and the parks and trails in Baltimore City. It really is remarkable, right, when you're trying to raise a family.
Mm-hmm. And when as you stated, you know, the middle class neighborhoods is right up and down there. You have Walterson, you have Beverly Hills, you have Arcadia, you have so many parks, so many amenities right there off of 895-95. So I really, really enjoy it. But that Harford Road corridor is one of the greatest assets that we have, especially with the little small diners and things that people may not even know about.
Hamilton, baby.
Senator, give our listeners, one of the things we like to do on Baltimore Positive is give our listeners a sense of who the folks are that represent them. So talk a little bit about who Corey McCray is, where he grew up, where his value system came from. Give us a little insight into little Corey McCray, who grew up to be this well-respected state senator.
You know what? I appreciate that. I'm born and raised in the city. I always tell folks that I face the same challenges that every young man, every young woman may have faced maybe a little bit extra more. So I moved back and forth. My mom lived in West Baltimore in Emerson Village, and my grandmother lived on the east side of Baltimore City. So whenever my mom got sick and tired of me, I moved my grandmother. And when my grandmother got upset, she sent me back to my mom.
Hold on. So you both were Edmondson Village, because that's pretty much, Don, you're right around the corner there, right? 612 Allendale?
Listen, I guarantee you the senator's going to know. People are listening to the show. I spent a lot of my childhood at 612 Allendale Street, Senator. Right there in Edmondson Village, right down the street from St. Bernardine's.
Yep, I know exactly where it is. Mr. McCoy had a barber shop right there on Emerson and Allendale for the longest time.
Exactly.
So I know exactly where the 600 block of Allendale is. I went to Emerson for 4 months. I went to Northern for about a year and a half, and I graduated from Fairmont Harford. We called it Harford Institute on Harford in 25th, and folks that's older than me called it Lake Clifton Middle, the middle school. So graduated, and luckily I always tell folks, by the grace of God, I had a mother that didn't give up on her son. And I got lucky and found an apprenticeship program because of her. She actually called the Maryland Department of Labor. Back then it was called Dollar. And she said, send me a list of every apprenticeship program that you have in the state of Maryland. And I went and filled out applications. I got accepted into the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, Local 24. And when I got accepted, I almost thought it was too good to be true. I couldn't believe that someone was going to pay me to actually learn a trade and go to school. And I thought that they were hustling me. I thought they were going to put me out in my third year. But you realize that there are employers that just, you know, have an appreciation for a workforce, a trained workforce, and know that there's a value in holding on to that training and making sure that they excel. I took the training that I learned from being an electrician. I always knew how to hustle, and I just needed to figure out how to do it constructively, and I started purchasing homes up and down that Bel Air Road corridor. So I've been buying houses up and down Bel Air Road since I was 20 years of age. I'm an electrician out of the IBW Local 24. And when I started purchasing the homes, I realized that there was so much more value in being challenged by some of the community stakeholders. One in particular that I remember is Tony Dawson, Edie Taylor, saying, what are you doing back for the neighborhoods that you're taking money out of? And that's when I went and I joined the Bel Air Edison Community Association Board. I sat on Bel Air Edison Neighborhood Inc.'s board, and I found myself being a very strong participant within the neighborhood associations while still being an entrepreneur.
Well, and then Corey, realized, you're one of the people. Go ahead. I'm sorry. No, go ahead.
And just let me know, you know, realizing that I tell folks, I've known my wife since I was 17 years of age. Demetria, she grew up in Oliver. She went to Poly. But Demetria was smarter than me because she started voting as soon as she turned 18. And then I didn't really understand how important and intertwined politics is in our everyday lives till I was about 25 years of age. And that's when if you look me up in the van file, you'll see that I sporadically voted. I voted every once in a while whenever a friend may say, hey, it's an important election. And I didn't start doing that until I was 25 years old.
So you weren't a super voter in the van. You don't show up as a super voter.
Not at all. Not at all. Now, I didn't really get it till maybe like 2010. I realized I was supposed to be doing the primary and the general election. But our neighborhoods needed so much more, and that's what actually gravitated me to the local piece of politics and really understanding how important it is. Wherever your BGE lights go out and they come back on in 2 days or 2 weeks, whether your street gets clean, whether to pick up, you have to be able to call that local council person and realizing how important that is intertwined. And I remember me and my friends getting together. We started a Democratic club. We called it the Best Democratic Club and just wanted to engage and be more active in local politics. And I look, a lot of them are currently elected to office at this moment.
Well, let's talk about that. Corey McCray is here, state senator. He is in 45. You have to go look 45 up. We've talked about 46 and all these places. But have you been in anywhere up and down Bel Air Road? I mean, I'm going to say Gill's. I'm going to say the Keswick Bakery.
Yep.
I'm going to say maybe King Discount Liquors. I was looking at all the businesses.
Did you say Woodley Bakery, too?
Woodley Bakery, absolutely. Yep, peach bread. Right. Got to get some peach bread. You know what? I'll meet meet you over there for peach bread sometime next week, because I got to get an order of that. Your association with the city and where we are with councilmen, we've had all of the elected, the prospective mayors on for the last year. The election got moved by 5-6 weeks. We've talked so much about all of this. Brandon Scott, as the mayor of the city, and obviously city council president's changed now. Optimism. Give me some optimism as a fellow Baltimore City resident, taxpayer, invested citizen. Where are we going to be in 48 months, Corey?
You know what? I'm very excited in reference to Brandon's leadership. I think that not only is the city excited, but I found whether it's Republican, Democrat, there's a natural excitement, and they know if Brandon Scott wins, the city wins. And I think that that's one of the feelings that you get nationally. You know, looking at the work that Brandon has done and the relationships that he's built with a lot of these younger elected officials across the country, I'm always excited about that. I could just remember being in the chat, so things of that nature, and everybody just rooting for this young man. I think that when he came out a couple days after it was announced that the total was final, and he says to the young man and to the young woman that don't believe that they can end up in this spot, that people are telling you you'll never be anything, this just proves that you can do it. And that's the level of excitement. I'm also encouraged because he spent a significant amount of time within government. So I think about the time that he worked as a city council liaison. I think about the time that he's worked in the council president's office, and I think about the time that he spent in the mayor's office just as one of the people that are, you can consider a soldier, making sure that you take care and advocate for the neighborhoods and making sure that things actually happen. I can see his growth ways transcended and spent several years in the city council position and now as the council president. So he has the inner working of how these agencies function, what is happening, what is not happening that's supposed to happen, and watching him to be able to have the relationships and have the know-how to go in this position and lead our city at such a young age, but be born and raised similar to myself and be able to identify with that. I'm just inspired by his work ethic, but I'm also inspired for the city and the future of what we have to look forward to.
Well, you mentioned the things we're doing right and the things we're doing wrong. I mean, you've been a part of this, and you know, whether it's getting water bills collected or you know any of a number of social ails that we have here in the city, the things that we haven't done well, what's going to change about that to make these things better? And certainly things like education and crime are going to take more money, right?
So one of the things that I think about is that this is a customer service business, and the city has to be in the business of customer service. So there has to be a sense of urgency, whether the issue is small or large. They have to be communicated to, and if a person wants a phone call, they have to get a phone call back. And that's just the entrepreneur skills. But what happens, too, is when the leader is projecting that type of energy, letting people know that everyone matters, no matter what neighborhood you're in, leading by example, what you'll find is that the rank and file, the people that are the middle managers, you'll find the folks that are actually doing the work, they're also going to be reciprocating that type of behavior because they know that this is the direction that the city is moving in. So that's what I'm inspired about, a sense of urgency, a level of energy, customer service. You know, we can do all the legislation that we want, but if you're not taking care of the basic quality of life issues are being overlooked, that's the foundation, and that's how you build from there. I think that once you get from there, we have to also be making sure that we're attractive to each and everyone, no matter what neighborhood that you're living in. Looking at some of these underserved communities, we're doing a significant amount of work over there in the 4x4 community, where we have the community land trust coming in and purchasing homes and making sure that they're affordable for folks and making sure that we look at and offer nice schools. I have 4 kids. I look at my kids going to public school, but I think about the Ingenuity program. I think about the work that Dr. Drummond's doing over at Hamilton. I think about what Principal Samuels is doing at Tench Tillman. And those are the things that we're doing well. We have to continue to model it, and we have to change this behavior within here and make our city attractive and grow our city.
Boy, Donnie's talking education. He's right up your alley, right?
Oh, and the energy and the enthusiasm. I mean, you feel good with folks like this in there fighting for the city. And speaking, Senator, about fighting for the city, You've been very involved, one of the leaders on this whole fair fight, increasing the minimum wage in the state of Maryland. It's run into a little bit of a roadblock. You're out there trying to make sure it doesn't get run off the rails. Can you update our listeners on where we are with the efforts to increase Maryland's minimum wage and whether it can survive through this pandemic?
Don, it's such an important issue. So you know, especially leading the county, that it's important that you can't just propose the ideas. You have to also move people along with the ideas. And then once you get the policy passed, you have to make sure that it's implemented in the manner that you wanted it implemented. So what we did in 2019, we passed the minimum wage up to $15 an hour by 2025. This was agreed upon where it was comfortable for businesses, but also moved our folks in the right direction in the appropriate manner. The reality is that nobody should have to work two or three jobs just to be able to sustain a life. The same part is when you think about the poverty, when you think about poverty in the city of Baltimore, you're talking about one in four families living in poverty. When you think about the Eastern Shore, you're talking about 20% of the folks over there, one in five living in poverty. When you talk about Western Maryland, 18% poverty. The reality is that we can do better, and I'm glad that the General Assembly thought so to make sure that we move in this direction. The first raise kicked in January 1st. 2020, and we see that the world did not come to an end. Actually, our unemployment numbers after that time had actually went down. So it went from $10.10 to $11. There is a raise that will kick in on January 1st, 2021, where it'll go from $11 to $11.75. And then for those businesses that are 14 or less, you're going to see them go up from 11 to 1160. So you'll see folks get this incremental change. And Don was talking about, just for the listeners, there was a measure where we have a clause in there that if the economy ever eclipsed or for any unforeseen reason that we needed to hold it, that the Board of Public Works, the three members, the governor, the comptroller, and the treasurer, would be able to hold that up. There were some constituency groups that were saying that we needed to hold up the minimum wage, but I really didn't feel it. The coalition that we had built in reference to legislators, advocates, and folks around also didn't feel as though this was the measure, especially because the folks that were actually taking care of us while we were staying in our home are the people that work at grocery stores, are the people that's cleaning our hospitals, are the folks that's working at our nursing homes, and are very close in reference to the proximity of making minimum wage. So we were glad that the treasurer and the comptroller, we have gotten a solid commitment that they also do not feel as though that this is the time to hold up the minimum wage. So we're glad that, and that commitment was made, I want to say, maybe about a week and a half ago. So we're very, very thankful for the comptroller and the treasurer's position to make sure that we, January 1st, we move accordingly.
Well, Senator, we regularly invite the governor, and Nestor has reached out repeatedly to ask the governor to come on and join us because, you know, we don't want to make the show where we're picking on the governor. We've been very complimentary of the governor and the way that he's handled the pandemic, particularly in the beginning of the pandemic. Maryland appears to continue to flatten the curve. I think the governor deserves credit for that. But there are things that do confound me from time to time. And as a state senator, maybe you can react to this. In other words, we've got a governor whose first instinct is to try to stop Kerwin. You know, he vetoes Kerwin, which then affects school construction. Got a governor who's opposing, for the working men and women of Maryland, increasing the minimum wage. I don't understand what the governor's trying to do for Baltimore when he opposes those kind of important initiatives.
Yep, you're absolutely right. So we applaud the governor where he needs to be applauded. And as you stated, when the beginning of the pandemic, we had a leader for the state of Maryland. But at the end of the day, it is incumbent upon us as also leaders to challenge the folks that are in these positions, myself included, to be better. And when you talk about what does better look like, when you're talking about wages for folks that need it the most, when you're talking about educational opportunities and correcting equity challenges that's across the state of Maryland for black and brown young folks, when you talk about school construction, whether you're in Baltimore County, whether you're in Montgomery County, Howard County, Baltimore City, we all have that need. The Eastern Shore, Western Maryland equally have that need. But right now in this environment that we're in, We're in like a reawakening, Don, where people are becoming very eye-opening to education in reference to the inequities that go on to the education. One of the things that we all know is that if you want to correct poverty, the best way is to give an equitable education opportunity to our K through 12 folks. That was what was being sought by the Speaker Jones, by under the leadership of President Ferguson, to make sure that we can move in the right direction in reference to early childhood for pre-kindergartners, no matter whether you're in Baltimore City or Montgomery County, to make sure that our teachers are paid appropriately when we think about the professions of doctors and lawyers and things of that nature, but the people that are teaching the doctors and the lawyers sometimes aren't able to sustain themselves. Making sure that we can address them. Apprenticeships, when we think about those opportunities for CTE or whether you're going to go to higher education and how we're preparing our young people, when we talk about poverty, I don't want to keep going on, but this is how we correct that course in reference to our neighborhoods, Don and Nestor. School construction is another measure. Minimum wage is just another factor. There's so many there, and we have to get that right, and we have to push on our leaders to do that. So I agree.
Corey, we've talked a lot about housing and affordable housing, and now, unfortunately, in COVID, we're talking about people, rents being due, and people like you that own a house, that have a renter, you have a note. This is the next thing over the next 60 to 90 days, certainly in communities like ours that are trying to get back on our feet. And Lord knows where this virus is going to take us. As Dr. Fauci says, the virus will decide this. But for people that are having this issue right now, I know Jack's tried to come to the forefront, and the tail end of where he is and hand this thing over to Brandon. But this is going to be a problem for everybody in our country, I think.
Nope, you're absolutely right. So we're talking about, I want to say August is when it's really, really going to penetrate, because the courts are going to start hearing these cases after July 25th, and we're all going to see it. You see that a lot of the county execs are stepping up from the federal dollars that were achieved and making sure that they have rental assistance programs that's available for their constituencies. I think that one of the things, they just had a hearing in Environment and Transportation. I'm not on the committee, but I actually watched it via video. One of the most important takeaways that I took was that Baltimore was a leader in reference to making sure that if a landlord takes that money, that there is certain criteria and making sure that that person still isn't going to get evicted, even if it's a partial that they take. So I think that that's one of the most important things that we can do. We're also paying attention to the federal government as they talk about the next relief package and what that looks like for local government, what that looks like for state government, but also making sure that rental assistance is inclusive in that. Also looking at some of the state programs that we already have, whether it's Bernie, whether it's Community Legacy, all the stuff that's coming out of DHCD, and seeing if we can repurpose those things that we have to make sure that we can still assist the people that are the most vulnerable. But you're right. The climate that we're in or about to be in over the next couple weeks is going to be very, very toxic and very, very challenging for a lot of our jurisdictions, and we have to step in. And Nestor, I feel as though this is the appropriate moment to not just look at the rental assistance for residential, but think about all those small businesses where for PPP, you could use it for paychecks, but you couldn't use it for the rent. So all of those small businesses that couldn't operate for 2-3 months, and then they're also going to be having rental challenges as we think about that. So it's a very big challenge that we're in with COVID-19, and we really, really need our federal government to kind of step in and help our local and state folks out.
Senator, what's your thought? We talked with Dr. Learman. We talked recently with Senate President Ferguson. What's your talk about what pressure the General Assembly can bring on the governor and the Board of Election Supervisors to make sure that we can vote by mail, that we can do it efficiently, that we can count the votes? This is not hyperbole, I don't think, anymore to say. This is the most important election of our lifetime. None of us will ever have a more important election than November the 3rd. What role can you all play as state senators and delegates to make sure that we get this right in Maryland, at least?
Yep. So I've written a number of op-eds around this issue, the things that we did right, but most importantly, the things that we did wrong in reference to sometimes people that could have been disenfranchised or were disenfranchised around the issue. So the greatest tool that the elected officials, as whether you're a council person, whether I'm speaking to a delegate or one of my colleagues in the Senate, we have the bully pulpit. So I think that we have to make sure that we stay in front of this and communicate effectively in reference to what we want to see in November. So everyone should receive the mail ballot as we think about this. There should be expansion of the early voting centers during that time or the day of election centers. There should be a number of the drop-off centers that should be there. We should be tracking the ballots from no matter what vendor has that agreement or that contract to make sure that everybody gets their ballot in an appropriate manner. And when I say appropriate manner, I'm talking about timing. There's no way that Don should get his ballot on April 29th, but Corey gets his ballot on May 26th. That's inappropriate. And
it was crazy. It was crazy.
Yep. All have the same time. So those are the things that we should get in. But once again, we should be controlling our message. We should get out there early with our message and let folks know that mail was good, that we should do that again. And one of the things that I've just started talking about was the disenfranchised community that's actually in our pretrial center. So a couple of days ago, I actually wrote the State Board of Elections Director and Secretary Green from Public Safety to make sure that these folks are protected, because that was one of the populations that I thought that was missing during this primary, and wanted to make sure that they are taken care of during this general.
Well, I hope you'll add to your letter writing campaign and your communication, and frequent listeners in the show know that this is what drives me crazy. There is no reason that as votes come in to the Board of Elections on the vote by mail, as they come in, you know, a few thousand each day and a few thousand each day, there's no reason why all of the votes that come in prior to Election Day are not counted before that. 8:30 or so on Election Eve, we should have the largest percentage of votes posted ever. People, I think, Senator, are not thinking clearly about November when they say, well, could take longer than ever to count the votes. Well, the reality is it should take less time than ever. All of the votes that come in ahead of time should be in the bank. So hypothetically, if 50-60% of the people are going to vote, have voted ahead of time, those votes should be in the hopper. Somebody hits a button and they're posted at 8:30 at night. We should not be waiting days and days or weeks to know who wins an election.
Well, just operationally as citizens, we want to have confidence in the process that I don't have anymore.
And I think that we can get there. So when I wrote the op-eds, I said that I do believe that vote by mail, especially during the health pandemic that we were in, was definitely appropriate. But we have to get the ministers of the vote by mail to make sure that they move in that direction. We had a special election with the congressional district where we could have taken the opportunity to learn from because it was a smaller sample. And now we've had a primary. So it's no way that we should have many of the kinks that we had, whether it's the special or the primary in this upcoming general election. And that could be making sure that the addresses are corrected, making sure that the folks that, like I said, the time frame in which you get the ballot, making sure that we have access on election day to those folks that still have problems, but making sure there's an appropriate amount of sites. And I'm proud because the Election Director Association has also said these things and have already been proactive by writing their letter. I think that the ACLU has already stepped in and written their letter. The League of Women Voters has already stepped in, and they've relayed that message consistently to the State Board of Elections. And I'm thankful that the Speaker and the Senate President have already said what direction that they would like to move in also.
Well, thanks for your advocacy on that. I guess another major issue, Corey, I'm sure you deal with each and every day, you get a call from Brandon, and he says, all right, Senator, I want you to come in. I want to have lunch. I want you to sit down. I want you to tell me the two or three things that I need to do right away to get a handle on crime in the city, to turn this city around, to drive the homicides down, to drive our crime rate down. I don't want you to bring me a list of 10 phone calls. I want you to bring me a list of two or three. What's on your list? Two or three things that you share with the mayor?
You know what? So right now I just got my mind on the level of illegal dumping and how dirty the city is. I think that what happens is we know that there are these indirect things that also draw crime. So I think that in reference to how dirty the city is, I think that our young people, we have to make sure that we have proactive things for our young people. So I would definitely, I already know that he's a proponent. But I think that, you know, right now, because of COVID, it's a little bit different. But, like, job opportunities, Baltimore City gets it right in reference to Youth Works. And we're a leader amongst the region and a lot of other jurisdictions. But it's no way that I wouldn't have full employment for Youth Works. And any young person, instead of them having idle time and being on the street, whether they're a squeegee kid, whether they're doing other selling water, they would be within those programs, and I would make sure that I found that those money. So I would take illegal dumping, I would take our young people, and then still continue to go after the violent criminal offenses. Those are the three things I would give up.
Sounds like he's put a little bit of thought into this, right, Don?
Yeah. I think he's been down that road.
Well, we've really enjoyed our visit with you, and amidst these tough times, I wish we could do it over a crab cake at Fadley's or get you out to State Fair from some chicken and waffles and shrimp and grits and a delicious Cobb salad. But hopefully that time will come, and I know you'll be taking us over to Coco's. You'll be introducing me to all the places up and down Hamilton that I haven't been over there long enough, and I will enjoy every minute of that. So
or I'll get you in Station North and down in East Baltimore. It's like we've got a new hotel down there. So it's a number of places that I would love to take you in the 45th District.
I am the happy Northeast 45th eater.
Don and Nestor, if I would be remiss if I forgot this one. And I have one of the largest anchor institutions for African Americans in my district, which is the Great Blacks and Wax Museum. I can remember going to that museum when I was a kid and still making sure that we keep
that alive.
Talk to us
a little bit about that museum, Senator. Give them a self-promotion. Promote them a little bit.
You know what? It's run by Dr. Joanne Martin. The vision was set by her and her husband. I can remember just the great work. They weren't always in East Baltimore, but eventually they moved right there by North and Broadway for folks that's not familiar with it.
You know what I call that, Corey? I call that Sears is what I call that.
Sears is Hartford and North Avenue, but right within that same corridor. And, like, the reality is when we think about what organization has preserved the history of African Americans, when we think about tourism, whenever I go in there, I'll see people from Pennsylvania, I'll see people from New York that came specifically to Baltimore to see the National Great Blacks and Wax Museum. And I know that that's one of the proudest moments, and it's one of the proudest anchor institutions that I have right there in the 45th Legislative District.
So, Nestor, I think we have another arts group that we need to add to Baltimore Positive and have more real soon.
I'm in. Count me in. We'll get that done before the summer's over. Tell you what, Senator, take care of yourself. Stay safe.
I appreciate you guys.
You know,
y'all have a blessed day.
Enjoy the family and do all that stuff in the summertime, all right?
Yes, sir. All right. Bye-bye.
Corey McCray joining us here on Baltimore Positive on behalf of former Baltimore County Executive Don Moeller. All of our sponsors, Taharka Ice Cream. What I got, the Mint Flicks and Chills. Peppermint ice cream with homemade peppermint patties and chocolate, and nothing to dislike about that. Always made here in Baltimore using the award-winning ice cream to serve up social change. Nobody doing it better than our friends at Taharka. Also, State Fair out in Catonsville, they'll be opening up El Guapo Mexican. I'm looking forward to that before the end of the month. I was socially distanced with some poutine with my wife and some Brussels sprouts and some delicious fried chicken out at State Fair this week. We'll also get back to Fadley's the minute we can. They're opening out in Catonsville as well. You can ship those delicious Fadley's crab cakes anywhere in the world. We also did a pretty significant and lengthy Baltimore Positive segment on where those crab cakes come from at Fadley's. You're going to learn a lot about that and also about the watermen and the situation for labor we have over on the Eastern Shore. Moeller and Gary Realty still closing deals, still selling homes. All the listings up online. You can find them at MoellerandGary.com 410-489-2621. And I've been threatening to have Jeff Moeller on ever since. Well, he was on the beginning of COVID, but we're going to get him on the beginning of the baseball season as the Orioles and hopefully the Ravens get to ramp themselves up to hopefully getting back to something normal around here. I am Nestor. Along with former Baltimore County Executive Don Mahler, we are Baltimore Positive at WNST.net, AM 1570. Calm, local, and always Baltimore Positive.